has the capacity for it. Jeff had an idea. Hey, why don't we just interview her? What do you mean? Bobby was confused. Why don't I just sit down with Nancy and talk to her the way I talked to Ted? Jeff didn't wait for a response. If she doesn't want to be here, she'll probably make that clear. She might even decide to leave on her own. Bobby looked deflated. Oh, I really don't want to lose anyone else. Before Claire could pounce on him, he continued, but if that's what needs to happen, I'm okay with it. Claire patted her colleague on the head. Jeff continued, I won't make it a witch hunt or anything. I'll just describe what we're trying to do with the culture and see if she has the stomach for it. And what if she says she's up for it? Bobby asked. How do we teach her to be smarter? That's a high-class problem, my friend, Claire announced. If Attila the Hun walked into this office right now and convinced me that he really wanted to get better dealing with people, I know we could do it. Most training and development comes down to how much a person wants to change. Jeff hoped Nancy would be easier than Attila the Hun. Part 5. Indicators. Re-interviewing. Nancy came to Jeff's office a little after lunch. Jeff asked her to clear the rest of her day, just in case. He knew the request might unnerve her, since she didn't know the purpose of the meeting. But he decided it would be worth the temporary stress to have enough time to discern whether she was open to change, and perhaps to get the process started. Nancy sat down in one of the chairs facing Uncle Bob's big desk, and Jeff thought she seemed less than happy to be there. "How are you, Nancy?" he asked, with considerable interest and kindness. "I'm fine, Jeff." Her response was just barely more than curt. "How do you like your new job?" Though she didn't seem interested in an answer, Jeff responded as though she were dying to know. "It's a little more challenging than I thought, but I've got better people working with me than I could have imagined." Nancy nodded, as if to say, "Good for you." Jeff dove in, determined to be as confident as he was kind. "So the reason I asked you to come see me is to talk to you about your career at VB and your development." She seemed confused and detached all at once. Jeff thought about his conversation with Ted and went for broke. "Nancy, you know that teamwork is one of our values and that it's really important to Bob, right along with safety and quality." She nodded. Nothing else. Jeff went on. "Well, we're going to continue that focus and even step it up a little around teamwork, especially given the fact that we're going to be taking on a lot more work this year, with the hotel in St. Helena and the wing at Queen of the Valley Hospital." He continued, "The only way we're going to be able to staff those projects and get them done is if we make sure that everyone is working as a team." Jeff noticed that Nancy began to roll her eyes just briefly, which provoked him to address her objections. "Now, this isn't anything touchy-feely. You don't know me, Nancy, but I'm not a fan of hugging or holding hands or catching people falling out of a tree." For the first time, he saw the glimpse of a smile from Nancy. It was gone as fast as it appeared. "Anyway, I want to make sure that all of the people we hire and all of the people who work here understand what we mean by being a team player and that they really want to be one. And I'm starting with people in leadership positions." More nodding from Nancy, but no sign of interest. Jeff knew that was about to change. "So Claire and Bobby and I have been working hard lately to define exactly what we mean by a team player, and we've settled on 3 words. Jeff stood and went to the whiteboard. "Team players have 3 things in common. They are humble, hungry, and smart." He wrote the words on the whiteboard and returned to his chair. Nothing from Nancy, so Jeff pushed on. Humble is pretty obvious. We can't abide big egos. Hungry is about working hard and being passionate about our work, and smart has to do with being aware of the people around you and dealing with them in a positive, functional way. It was clear that Nancy was beginning to process things in her mind, but she wasn't ready to make any comments. So Jeff asked the $64,000 question. How do you think you stack up against these qualities? Now Nancy moved in her chair. To make it easier for her to loosen up, Jeff added, "And we all struggle in one or more of these areas from time to time." That seemed to be the impetus Nancy needed. "Well, anyone that works for me for more than a few minutes will say I'm hungry. That would be my strongest area, I'm sure." Nancy paused to check on Jeff's reaction. He nodded and added, "I'd say that's obvious. And though Craig might disagree, I don't think that being humble is a problem for me. I mean, that might sound arrogant, but I don't think I have a particularly big ego." "Actually," Jeff replied, "Craig said the same thing about you." Nancy seemed genuinely surprised. "Really?" "Absolutely. He told me himself." With a slightly but undeniably higher level of confidence, she began, "Well, then, I'd have to say that I'm not that good at social interaction, which is the smart part, right?" Jeff nodded. "That's right." He decided not to say anything else, wanting Nancy to continue. She did. "Frankly, I just don't spend a lot of energy on being nice all the time. I'd rather focus on getting things done. Some people don't like that, I guess." Jeff was slightly incredulous. "Let me get this straight, Nancy. You think it's a waste of energy to be nice to people?" Nancy didn't answer him, so he continued. "We're not talking about giving each other back rubs and hugs." Nancy laughed. "Okay, it's not that I don't want to be nice." She seemed to be searching for a way to explain her way out of the situation. "I don't know." Jeff asked his next question gently. "Nancy, do you know how others receive the things you say to them?" After considering the question for a moment, she responded. "The thing is, people who aren't socially smart probably aren't very good at knowing it. Otherwise, they'd be better at it." Jeff laughed. "I'd say you're right about that." Nancy went on, "So, as much as I'd like to say that I'm willing to work on that..." She paused, and Jeff thought she was going to tell him that she wasn't interested in whatever he was offering. And then she finished. "I'm going to need help from someone to get better." She paused, and then said the three most important words of all. "But I'll try." Jeff wanted to jump up and hug Nancy, but figured she'd probably throw him to the floor. "Nancy, that's all I can ask." About a week later, Jeff made Craig's hiring official within 2 days, and the reaction from employees was overwhelmingly positive. That was enough to make the other three members of the executive team glad not to have hired Ted Marchbank. But it wouldn't be the only thing. A few days after Ted had pulled himself out as a candidate for the job at VB, one of the unauthorized references called. This was a former employee at NBC who knew of Ted well. Her name was Danny, and she was Kim's brother's girlfriend's sister. At first, she seemed less than forthcoming until Jeff explained, "Actually, Ted decided not to pursue a job here after all." "All right, then," Danny explained. "Then I guess you don't need me." Before she could hang up, Jeff caught her. "Can I ask you one quick question, Danny, just between you and me? You don't have to answer if you don't want to." After a moment, she relented. "Sure. What's your question?" "Well, our culture is extremely, He paused, searching for a word or phrase that would be accurate but not showy. He settled on down-to-earth and unpretentious. He continued, "We were concerned that Ted might have been a little too," again he paused, "sophisticated for us, if you know what I mean." Danny laughed. "Oh, I think I know what you mean." Before Jeff could say anything, she went on, "And let's just say that down-to-earth wouldn't be how I would describe Ted." "Okay," Jeff said. "I appreciate your honesty." A few days later, Claire's connection came through. He was one of Ted's former clients, and he was less delicate than Danny. "Listen, Jeff, I know Bob Shanley, and he and Ted are not at all alike when it comes to personality or culture. You dodged a bullet there, if you ask me. We can just leave it at that." Claire and Bobby were enormously relieved when they heard about those references. Even so, occasionally, one of the three executives was likely to express some doubt about the humble, hungry, smart system and whether it would be enough. On those days, the other leaders would convince them to trust the model. Of course, the proof would be in the pudding. About a month later, less than 30 days after moving Craig into the executive suite and everyone committing fully to the new hiring model, everything at VB had changed completely. All open positions had been hired with ideal team players, and the projects were both way ahead of schedule. And every single employee who lacked humility, hunger, and smarts had chosen to leave the company on their own, with no animosity. Jeff was so happy that he was literally flying around the offices, his feet completely off the ground. And that's how he knew that he was dreaming. When he woke up, Jeff was immediately thinking about the hospital project and whether it would ever be adequately staffed. Aside from that and a handful of other tactical issues, Jeff was generally pleased with the process that was underway at the company. Perhaps the most important part of that process was the new hiring program that Claire had put in place. Based on what she and her colleagues had learned in the process of coming up with Humble, Hungry, and Smart, and the experience of testing it with Ted and others, Claire had launched a remarkably simple training program for everyone involved in the hiring process. From recruiting team players to vetting them during interviews, all hiring managers understood the basics of Humble, Hungry, and Smart, and their roles in making the model a reality at VB. As for the hiring itself, they were still not where they wanted to be in terms of numbers. However, that concern was offset by the quality of a few of the more senior people they had hired, people who would have key roles at the hotel and the hospital. With them on board, Claire felt that hiring would get easier because she would have more people out there looking for the kind of employees who fit the company's culture. One of the biggest moral victories the team had achieved was rehiring Pedro, one of the foremen who had quit amidst the stress and politics at Oak Ridge. The key to bringing him back was Bobby's passion around the new culture being built at VB, and Nancy's humility. At Jeff's urging, Nancy sat down with Pedro and explained to him how she had let him down in not confronting the issues that had festered at Oak Ridge. Pedro would later tell Bobby that she had never spoken to him that way before, and that if she were any indication of what was happening at the company, he would be glad to be a part of it. Jeff had been so pleased with Nancy's progress that he decided to take 3 full days and meet with every one of the company's 17 foremen and project leads for a re-interview. For those that seemed to have no shortfalls in Humble, Hungry, or Smart, Jeff used the discussion to reinforce his commitment to hiring and nurturing team players, and to ensure that every VB leader was ready to make it his or her responsibility to protect the culture. For the handful of leaders who had clear shortfalls in Humble, Hungry, or Smart, Jeff took a more direct approach. After getting agreement on their need for improvement in one or more of the areas, he kindly assured them of 3 things. First, improvement was not an option. Second, they would have plenty of support in their development. Third, if they decided to opt out, that would be okay. Only two people wanted to leave. One of them Jeff convinced to stay, knowing that her motivation for leaving was just the shame of being called on her issue. The other one, a particularly difficult foreman named Tom, got no argument from Jeff at all. Claire was beside herself with relief when Jeff explained that Tom would be leaving on his own. "You know," she said to Jeff after the last of his re-interviews, "this isn't going to be easy, these two projects." Jeff smiled and didn't disagree with her. "But I'm as excited as I've been in years." "Me too," Jeff agreed. "Me too." About 6 months later, even though the new cultural model was now firmly in place, Jeff was concerned that the hospital and hotel projects weren't going very smoothly. Bobby was not so concerned. "That's okay, boss. No projects go smoothly. This is par for the course." Still, Jeff had hoped everything would be markedly better than normal. "I just feel like things should be much more predictable by now." As for the leaders who had been re-interviewed by Jeff and agreed to a development plan, only one had to be let go when it became clear that hunger just wasn't part of his makeup. The others were making progress, though Claire wasn't sure that one or two of them would be there for the long term. This also troubled Jeff, who thought that personnel situations would be completely resolved by now. "Come on, Jeff," Claire exhorted him. "We're almost where we need to be on hiring. The clients aren't even close to firing us, and everything is trending in the right direction. If you had told me 6 months ago that we'd still be in business at this point, I might have bet against you." Though he couldn't argue with her assertion, it still bothered Jeff that a couple of people who might not be team players still worked at VB. "Yes," Claire explained, "and we know exactly who they are and what needs to be done to fix it. You have to remember how we were a year ago and how most companies work." As he had grown accustomed to doing since his promotion, Craig gently scolded Jeff, "Stop making the perfect enemy of the good." Bobby piled on. "Yeah, you're not a consultant anymore. This is reality, and I'll take it." Though Jeff took great consolation in the reassurance of his experienced peers, he knew that he'd always be a little paranoid. And being a little paranoid was part of his job, he decided. Still, he wasn't about to change course. He had placed his bet and needed to let it play out over time. About a year later. On the one-year anniversary of Bob's surgery, many aspects of VB had changed substantially, and others had stayed largely the same. Bob himself was healthy and was enjoying real retirement, though he occasionally stopped by the office with his wife Karen for a visit. Each time he avoided talking too much business with Jeff, limiting his work-related comments to teasing him, often saying, "See, I told you it would be okay." Craig was firmly entrenched as an executive, working closely with Bobby on the day-to-day oversight of the two major projects, and even managing Nancy Morris directly, often calling her his best employee. The group of four executives had become closer with the addition of Craig, and couldn't imagine not having him on the team. But the biggest change that the humble, hungry, and smart model had made could be seen most starkly in human resources. Not the department, but the function. Though Claire and her small staff were certainly involved in maintaining the culture, Jeff had made it clear that his leadership team and their direct reports were responsible for ensuring that VB stayed humble, hungry, and smart. He also constantly reminded them that there was nothing theoretical or touchy-feely about it. From interviews and orientation to performance reviews and compensation decisions, the three virtues, as they came to be known, were to be regular topics of conversation. And of course, there was plenty of hands-on practical training around the five behavioral manifestations of teamwork. Trust, conflict, commitment, accountability, and results. Those courses had become much more effective with participants who shared the three underlying virtues. From a practical standpoint, there were a few indicators that VB's business had changed as a result of the clarity around teamwork. First, recruiting had shifted largely away from headhunters and outside agencies, as more and more employees, from contractors to foremen, sought out jobs at VB through friends and references. Second, morale at the company was undeniably higher, and turnover had dropped markedly. But Jeff was adamant that it shouldn't go away completely. If no one is leaving or being asked to leave, then we're probably not truly living these values. Finally, and most importantly from the standpoint of proof that the model worked, client satisfaction at the hospital and the hotel were better than Jeff and his team could have expected. Though fires had to be fought and unexpected challenges surfaced at inopportune times, the way the company rallied and addressed those issues no longer inspired panic and heroism. A new confidence, even in the messiest situations, permeated the offices and worksites of Valley Builders. Of all the leaders at VB, it was Bobby who most accurately and indelicately explained the benefits of how Humble, Hungry, and Smart had changed the company. At the end of the executive team's fourth quarter off-site meeting, as the four leaders were assessing the overall health of the organization, Bobby announced, "If you ask me, the best thing that's happened in the last year is that we've almost become a jackass-free zone. No matter what happens and what challenge we might face, give me a room of people who aren't jackasses and I'll be happy to take it on." And with that, he threw a T-shirt at Jeff, who held it up to reveal the word jackass, with a circle around it and a line through it. Though Jeff knew he would never actually wear that shirt, he kept it in his drawer at work as a reminder of his primary responsibility as the company's leader. The Model. The Three Virtues of an Ideal Team Player. This section of the book is about understanding the ideal team player model, what it means, where it comes from, and how it can be put to practical use. Let's start with the big picture. In his classic book, Good to Great, Jim Collins talks about the importance of successful companies getting the right people on the bus, a euphemism for hiring and retaining employees who fit a company's culture. It is a concept that is relatively simple and makes perfect sense, yet somehow it is often overlooked, as too many leaders hire mostly for competency and technical skills. For organizations seriously committed to making teamwork a cultural reality, I'm convinced that the right people are the ones who have those three virtues in common: humility, hunger, and people smarts. I refer to these as virtues because the word virtue is a synonym for the nouns quality and asset, but it also connotes the idea of integrity and morality. Humility, which is the most important of the three, is certainly a virtue in the deepest sense of the word. Hunger and people smarts fall more into the quality or asset category, so the word virtue best captures them all. Of course, to recognize and cultivate humble, hungry, and smart team members, or to become one yourself, you first need to understand exactly what these deceptively simple words mean, and how all three together make up the essential virtues of an ideal team player. Defining the three virtues. Humble. In the context of teamwork, humility is largely what it seems to be. Great team players lack excessive ego or concerns about status. They are quick to point out the contributions of others and slow to seek attention for their own. They share credit, emphasize team over self, and define success collectively rather than individually. It is no great surprise, then, that humility is the single greatest and most indispensable attribute of being a team player. What's amazing is that so many leaders who value teamwork will tolerate people who aren't humble. They reluctantly hire self-centered people and then justify it simply because those people have desired skills. Or they see arrogant behavior in an employee and fail to confront it, often citing that person's individual contributions as an excuse. The problem, of course, is that leaders aren't considering the effect that an arrogant, self-centered person has on the overall performance of the team. This happens in sports, business, and every other kind of team venture. There are two basic types of people who lack humility, and it's important, even critical, to understand them, because they look quite different from one another and impact a team differently. The most obvious kind is the overtly arrogant people who make everything about them. They are easy to identify because they tend to boast and soak up attention. This is the classically ego-driven type, and it diminishes teamwork by fostering resentment, division, and politics. Most of us have seen plenty of this behavior in our careers. The next type is much less dangerous, but still worth understanding. These are the people who lack self-confidence, but are generous and positive with others. They tend to discount their own talents and contributions, and so others mistakenly see them as humble. But this is not humility. While they are certainly not arrogant, their lack of understanding of their own worth is also a violation of humility. Truly humble people do not see themselves as greater than they are, but neither do they discount their talents and contributions. C.S. Lewis addressed this misunderstanding about humility when he said, "Humility isn't thinking less of yourself, but thinking of yourself less." A person who has a disproportionately deflated sense of self-worth often hurts teams by not advocating for their own ideas or by failing to call attention to problems that they see. Though this kind of lack of humility is less obtrusive and obvious than the other more negative types, it detracts from optimal team performance nonetheless. What both of these types have in common is insecurity. Insecurity makes some people project overconfidence, and others discount their own talents. And while these types are not equal when it comes to creating problems on a team, they each diminish performance. Hungry. Hungry people are always looking for more. More things to do, more to learn, more responsibility to take on. Hungry people almost never have to be pushed by a manager to work harder because they are self-motivated and diligent. They are constantly thinking about the next step and the next opportunity, and they loathe the idea that they might be perceived as slackers. It's not difficult to understand why hungry people are great to have on a team, but it's important to realize that some types of hunger are not good for a team and are even unhealthy. In some people, hunger can be directed in a selfish way that is not for the good of the team, but for the individual. And in some people, hunger can be taken to an extreme where work becomes too important, consuming the identity of an employee and dominating their life. When I refer to hunger here, I'm thinking about the healthy kind, a manageable and sustainable commitment to doing a job well and going above and beyond when it is truly required. Okay, few team leaders will knowingly ignore a lack of hunger in their people, most likely because unproductive, dispassionate people tend to stand out and create obvious problems on a team. Unfortunately, undiscerning leaders too often hire these people because most candidates know how to falsely project a sense of hunger during standard interviews. As a result, those leaders find themselves spending inordinate amounts of time trying to motivate, punish, or dismiss non-hungry team members once they're on board. Smart. Of the three virtues, this one needs the most clarification, because it is not what it might seem. It is not about intellectual capacity. In the context of a team, smart simply refers to a person's common sense about people. It has everything to do with the ability to be interpersonally appropriate and aware. Smart people tend to know what is happening in a group situation and how to deal with others in the most effective way. They ask good questions, listen to what others are saying, and stay engaged in conversations intently. Some might refer to this as emotional intelligence, which wouldn't be a bad comparison, but smart is probably a little simpler than that. Smart people just have good judgment and intuition around the subtleties of group dynamics and the impact of their words and actions. As a result, they don't say and do things or fail to say and do things without knowing the likely responses of their colleagues. Keep in mind that being smart doesn't necessarily imply good intentions. Smart people can use their talents for good or ill purposes. In fact, some of the most dangerous people in history have been noted for being interpersonally smart. The three virtues combined. If you're thinking that these three virtues seem somewhat obvious, I would be the first to agree with you. Looking at them one by one, I'm reluctant to present them in any way that would suggest that I believe they are novel or new. What makes humble, hungry, and smart powerful and unique is not the individual attributes themselves, but rather the required combination of all three. If even one is missing in a team member, teamwork becomes significantly more difficult and sometimes not possible. Before we get into that, this would probably be a good time to explain how the ideal team player model came to be. The history of the model. Back in 1997, a group of colleagues and I started our management consulting firm, the Table Group. Because we had worked together in a department I led in a previous company, we had an easy time agreeing on our core values, humble, hungry, and smart. These were the principles that guided our department previously, and we wanted to maintain them in our new firm, so we committed to hiring only people who embodied these concepts, and to avoid making any operational or strategic decisions that violated them. In the consulting work we did with clients, we not only helped leaders build better teams, but we also assisted them in clarifying everything from their strategies, tactics, roles, responsibilities, meetings, and most important for this conversation, values. In the course of discussing values, clients would inevitably ask us about ours at the Table Group. Now, we didn't publicize Humble, Hungry, and Smart. They were nowhere to be found on our website or in any of our collateral. We felt that as long as we understood and stayed true to them, no one else really needed to understand them. However, when clients asked us, we felt compelled to share them. And when we explained Humble, Hungry, and Smart, something strange would often happen. Clients would declare that they were going to adopt those values too. Of course, we would immediately protest and explain that an organization's values can't be copied or borrowed. They need to be true reflections of the unique history and culture of that organization. We often attributed our clients' interest in our values to expediency, or perhaps even laziness, their desire to grab the first set of positive-sounding words, so that they could declare their search for values over. Well, we eventually discovered we were wrong about their motivation and that there was a logical explanation why our clients wanted to adopt Humble, Hungry, and Smart. First, our firm's culture was all about teamwork, both in what we did with clients and in how we tried to behave internally. because we had always vowed to practice what we preached. Second, virtually all the companies that engaged our firm were already interested in teamwork, which makes sense given that we were best known for the book, The Five Dysfunctions of a Team. So it shouldn't have been terribly surprising to think that our hiring criteria and core values would make up the very definition of a team player, even if we didn't realize it at the time. Once we made this realization, we started to look at the relevance of Humble, Hungry, and Smart for other organizations in a different way. Those words weren't necessarily core values, but they were critical hiring and development criteria for any organization that wanted teamwork to be central to its operations. To make sure we weren't deluding ourselves, we asked the question, could a person fully practice the five behaviors at the heart of teamwork if he or she didn't buy into the idea of being humble, hungry, and smart? The answer was a resounding no. A person who is not humble will not be able to be vulnerable and build trust, making them unable to engage in honest conflict and hold others accountable. And they'll have a hard time committing to decisions that don't serve their interests. A colleague who lacks hunger will not be willing to engage in uncomfortable conflict, hold peers accountable for their behaviors, or do whatever it takes to achieve results, choosing instead to take an easier path. And a person who is not smart about people will most likely create unnecessary problems in the entire team-building process, especially when it comes to tactfully engaging in productive conflict and holding people accountable for their behaviors. After reviewing, discussing, and using the model in our own firm and seeing our clients try to adopt it in theirs, we became convinced that any leader who wants to make teamwork a reality should find and or develop people who are humble, hungry, and smart. To do all of this, leaders need to understand how these qualities work together and what happens when one or more of them are missing. The Ideal Team Player Model. The model on the following page depicts the intersections between humble, hungry, and smart, with the central overlapping piece representing the combined qualities of an ideal team player. That is not to imply that a person in that middle section will be consistently perfect in all of these virtues, or in any one of them, for that matter. No one is perfect. Even a person who is humble, hungry, and smart occasionally has a bad day, or a bad week, or even a bad time in their life. These are not permanent characteristics embedded in a person's DNA. Rather, they are developed and maintained through life experiences and personal choices at home and at work. When team members are adequately strong in each of these areas, when they possess significant humility, hunger, and people smarts, they enable teamwork by making it relatively easy for members to overcome the five dysfunctions of a team. That means they'll be more likely to be vulnerable and build trust, engage in productive but uncomfortable conflict with team members, commit to group decisions even if they initially disagree, hold their peers accountable when they see performance gaps that can be addressed, and put the results of the team ahead of their own needs. Only humble, hungry, and smart people can do those things without a great deal of coaching. Those who don't have all three virtues are going to require significantly more time, attention, and patience from their managers. Let's take a look at the various categories of people, starting with those who have none of the required qualities and moving to the ideal team players who have all three. The categories. O for three. Those who lack all three qualities, who are markedly deficient in humility, hunger, and people smarts, have little chance of being valuable team members. It would take great effort over a long period of time for them to develop the capacity for all three, let alone two, or even one. Fortunately for managers, These people are very easy to identify and rarely slip through interviews and make it onto teams. Unfortunately, life can be very hard for them. 1 for 3. For those who lack 2 of the 3 in a big way, it's also going to be an uphill battle. Not impossible, but not easy. Let's look at these 3 categories, the ones involving a team member who is only humble, hungry, or smart. Humble only, the pawn. People who are only humble but not at all hungry or smart are the pawns on a team. They are pleasant, kind-hearted, unassuming people who just don't feel a great need to get things done, and don't have the ability to build effective relationships with colleagues. They often get left out of conversations and activities and have little impact on the performance of a team. Pawns don't make waves, so they can survive for quite a long time on teams that value harmony and don't demand performance. Hungry only, the bulldozer. People who are hungry but not at all humble or smart can be thought of as bulldozers. These people will be determined to get things done, but with a focus on their own interests and with no understanding or concern for how their actions impact others. Bulldozers are quick destroyers of teams. Fortunately, unlike pawns, they stand out and can be easily identified and removed by leaders who truly value teamwork. However, in organizations that place a premium on production alone, bulldozers can thrive and go uncorrected for long periods of time. Smart only, the charmer. People who are smart but sorely lacking in humility and hunger are charmers. They can be entertaining and even likable for a while, but have little interest in the long-term well-being of the team or their colleagues. Their social skills can sometimes help them survive longer than bulldozers or pawns, but because their contributions to the team are negligible, they often wear out their welcome quickly. 2 for 3. The next 3 categories that we'll explore represent people who are more difficult to identify because the strengths associated with them often camouflage their weaknesses. Team members who fit into these categories lack only 1 of the 3 traits, and thus have a little higher likelihood of overcoming their challenges and becoming ideal team players. Still, lacking even 1 in a serious way can impede the team-building process. Humble and hungry, but not smart. The accidental messmaker. People who are humble and hungry but decidedly not smart are the accidental messmakers. They genuinely want to serve the team and are not interested in getting a disproportionate amount of attention and credit. However, their lack of understanding of how their words and actions are received by others will lead them to inadvertently create interpersonal problems on the team. While colleagues will respect their work ethic and sincere desire to be helpful, those colleagues can get tired of having to clean up the emotional and interpersonal problems that accidental messmakers so often leave behind. In the fable, Nancy was the accidental messmaker, a relatively ego-less, hard-working employee who lacked interpersonal dexterity and created unnecessary problems on the team. Though the accidental messmaker can definitely be a problem, of the 3 types that lack just 1 of the characteristics of an ideal team player, this is the least dangerous to a team, as accidental messmakers have no bad intentions and can usually take corrective feedback in good humor. Humble and smart, but not hungry. The lovable slacker. People who are humble and smart but not adequately hungry are the lovable slackers. They aren't looking for undeserved attention, and they are adept at working with and caring about colleagues. Unfortunately, they tend to do only as much as they are asked, and rarely seek to take on more work or volunteer for extra assignments. Moreover, they have limited passion for the work the team is doing, because they are generally charming and positive, it's easy for leaders to shy away from confronting or removing lovable slackers. After all, they're lovable. In the fable, a minor character referred to as Tommy was a lovable slacker. He was neither a jerk nor a complete sloth, but did only what was expected of him and no more. Tommy had passion about various pursuits in his life, but none of this passion was directed at work. Lovable slackers need significant motivation and oversight, making them a drag on the team's performance, more so than the accidental messmakers. But they don't represent the most dangerous of the three types who lack one of the virtues. That would be the skillful politician. Hungry and smart, but not humble. The skillful politician. People who are hungry and smart but lack humility are the skillful politicians. These people are cleverly ambitious and willing to work extremely hard, but only in as much as it will benefit them personally. Unfortunately, because they are so smart, skillful politicians are very adept at portraying themselves as being humble, making it hard for leaders to identify them and address their destructive behaviors. By the time the leader sees what's going on, the politician may have already created a trail of destruction among their more humble colleagues who have been manipulated, discouraged, and scarred. Many of us have worked with plenty of skillful politicians, as they tend to rise in the ranks of companies where leaders reward individual performance over teamwork. In the fable, Ted Marchbanks was the skillful politician. He was professional, charismatic, and motivated, which is why Jeff and his team almost hired him. Ultimately, Ted turned out to be much more interested in himself than on the people around him. Warning. Now is probably a good time for a few important warnings. First, keep in mind that accurately identifying people as bulldozers, charmers, pawns, accidental messmakers, lovable slackers, or skillful politicians is not always easy and shouldn't be done flippantly. Wrongly labeling a team member, even in private or jest, can be damaging. Second, don't assign these labels to colleagues who are truly ideal team players simply because they are relatively stronger in one of the three areas. For instance, don't refer to an ideal team player who is slightly less hungry than she is humble and smart as a lovable slacker. These classifications are reserved only for people who are significantly lacking in one or more of the three traits. Managers will need to be smart about how to use the terms with their employees. And remember, the real purpose of identifying these types is not to pigeonhole people, but to better understand what constitutes ideal team players so we can recognize or develop them on our teams. 3 for 3. Humble, hungry, smart. The ideal team player. Ideal team players possess adequate measures of humility, hunger, and people smarts. They have little ego when it comes to needing attention or credit for their contributions, and they are comfortable sharing their accolades, or even occasionally missing out on them. Ideal team players work with a sense of energy, passion, and personal responsibility, taking on whatever they possibly can for the good of the team. Finally, they say and do the right things to help teammates feel appreciated, understood, and included, even when difficult situations arise that require tough love. Most of us can recall having managed or worked with ideal team players in our careers, as they are quite appealing and memorable. Now that we understand each of the three virtues and how they fit together, we can look at how the model can be applied. Application. There are 4 primary applications of the ideal team player model within an organization. 1. Hiring. 2. Assessing current employees. 3. Developing employees who are lacking in one or more of the virtues. And 4. embedding the model into an organization's culture. Let's look at these one at a time. Application number one. Hiring. The most reliable way to ensure that teamwork takes hold in an organization would be to hire only ideal team players. Of course, that is neither possible nor practical, especially considering that most leaders don't have the luxury of creating their teams from scratch. But all leaders can certainly do their best to try to recruit, select, and hire people who are humble, hungry, and smart when an opportunity arises to bring on someone new. Though it would be nice to have a perfectly reliable diagnostic tool for accurately identifying and selecting people who are humble, hungry, and smart, no such tool currently exists. However, by doing thorough interviewing and selective reference checking, a manager can hire people with a high degree of confidence that they'll be ideal team players. The interview process. The most important part of interviewing for team players is simply knowing which answers and behaviors are the best indicators of humility, hunger, and people smarts, and then making the interview as revealing as possible. There are plenty of books in the world about behavioral interviewing that offer a variety of models and tools. For me, the key is sticking to a few concepts, all of which may seem obvious but are too often overlooked. Don't be generic. This first one is the most obvious of all, as it is largely the point of this section, if not the entire book. Still, it's worth stating. Too many interviews are so generic that they provide little or no insight into specific attributes. Instead, they leave interviewers with extremely general assessments of candidates. She seems like a nice person. I like her. That would be fine if you were looking for someone to mow your lawn once a week. If you're looking for a team player who is humble, hungry, and smart, being specific about targeted behaviors and attributes is critical. I'll provide examples of the kinds of questions that reveal those behaviors and attributes later in this section. Debrief each interview as a team. One of the biggest problems I see is a silo approach to interviewing. This happens when a handful of people conduct their own interviews and don't talk about what they've learned until after the entire round of interviews is complete. The problem is that one interview is no more specific or effective than the previous one. Instead, interviewers should debrief quickly after each interview, specifically around observations related to humility, hunger, and people smarts. For instance, if the first two interviewers agreed that the candidate is hungry and smart, the third can focus on humility, taking more time and probing more directly for the unknown piece. Consider group interviews. I often like to talk with candidates in a room with multiple team members. This allows us to debrief more effectively. For example, what did you think he meant when he said? This also gives you a sense of how the candidate deals with multiple people at once, which is a critical skill on a team. Some people are much different one-on-one than they are in a group, and you need to know that. Make interviews non-traditional. It is amazing that as we move further into the 21st century, most interviews are still the same stilted, rehearsed, and predictable conversations they were 40 years ago. The problem is not that they are boring or old-fashioned, but rather that they aren't effective for discerning whether a person has the behavioral skills and values that match an organization or a team. Someone once told me that the best way to know if you should hire a person is to go on a cross-country business trip with him. See how he handles himself in stressful, interactive situations and over long periods of time. While that isn't necessarily practical, I do believe that interviews should incorporate interaction with diverse groups of people in everyday situations and that they should be longer than 45 minutes. I like to get out of the office with a candidate and see him deal with people in an unstructured environment. Running an errand at the grocery store or the mall is not a bad idea. Spending time in a car and seeing how he behaves when he's not answering a question helps me understand him better. And remember, whatever I'm doing with that candidate, I'm looking specifically for signs that he is humble, hungry, and smart. Ask questions more than once. I call this the law and order principle. On that crime show, tough investigators would always seem to ask suspects the same question again and again until the perp admitted to the crime. Cop, did you murder the guy? Perp, no. Cop, did you murder the guy? Perp, no. Cop, did you murder the guy? Perp, okay, I did it. I did it. Yeah, that's an exaggeration, but the same idea can apply to an interview. Asking an interviewee a question once often yields a generically acceptable answer. Asking that question again in a different way might get you a different answer. If you're not sold on the response, ask a third time in a more specific way, and you will often get a more honest answer. Ask what others would say. This one relates somewhat to the previous suggestion. Instead of asking candidates to self-assess a given behavior or characteristic related to humility, hunger, or people smarts, ask them what others would say about them. For example, instead of asking someone if he considers himself to be a hard worker, ask him, "How would your colleagues describe your work ethic?" Or instead of asking a candidate if she gets along with her colleagues, ask her, "How would your manager describe your relationships with your colleagues?" Or here's an interesting one. Instead of asking someone if he is humble, ask, "If I were to ask your colleagues to assess your level of humility, what would they say?" Some interviewers will think this sounds obvious, but then they'll admit that they don't do it enough. Others will wonder if such a seemingly small change in tactics can make a difference. But there is just something about having to answer on behalf of another person that makes a candidate more honest. Perhaps this has to do with the possibility of the interviewer doing a reference check. Maybe it's a matter of not wanting to misrepresent someone else's views. Whatever the case, it seems to produce more reliable answers. Ask candidates to do some real work. This one won't always be possible, since it depends on the nature of the work. A doctor can't be asked to do surgery before being hired. But a copy editor, an advertising manager, or a management consultant can be given a simulated work project. The point is not to get free work, but rather to see how people perform in real-world situations so you can discern whether they are humble, hungry, and smart. Don't ignore hunches. If you have a doubt about a person's humility, hunger, or smarts, don't ignore it. Keep probing. More often than not, there is something causing that doubt. That's not to discourage keeping an open mind, but erring on the side of assuming that a person has the virtues of a team player is a bad idea. So many times hiring managers look back at the red flags they saw during interviews, the ones they chose to ignore, and regret not taking more time or energy to understand them. While it's never possible to have complete confidence in a hire, nagging doubts about a candidate's humility, hunger, or smarts need to be properly explored and discarded before an offer can be made. Scare people with sincerity. One of my favorite ways to ensure that I'm hiring people who are humble, hungry, and smart is to come right out and tell them that these are requirements for the job. It is probably wise to wait until the end of the interviewing process to do this, but it may be the most important part. Here's how it works. You finished interviewing, debriefing, and doing follow-up interviews, and you're pretty confident that the interviewee is humble, hungry, and smart, but you're not sure. Before making an offer to the candidate, assure him that you are absolutely fanatically committed to these principles, and that if an employee somehow made it through the interview process but did not share that commitment, it would be miserable working there. Let candidates know that they would be called out for their behavior again and again, and that they'd eventually dread coming to work. Also assure them that if they do fit the humble, hungry, smart description, work will be fantastic for them. Many people will try to get a job even if they don't fit the company's stated values, but very few will do so if they know that they're going to be held accountable day in and day out for behavior.